Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. Does Cape Cod have a gray seal problem? The gray seals have been blamed for eating up all the fish, polluting the water, and attracting more sharks to the Cape. So what has actually been their impact, and do we need to do something about them? To answer those questions, we turned to Andrea Bogomolny. She's the chair of the Northwest Atlantic Research Consortium. Sorry, the Northwest Atlantic Seal Research Consortium. And we began by asking whether she thinks that the seal population is actually exploding on the Cape.
I would say it is not exploding. It's a term that's often used in reference to the seal population that's out here. And I tend to remind people that the population we see now came from zero not that long ago. So anything over zero appears to us today as exploding, to some people. But it is a population that is healthy and in recovery.
When were we at zero? And do you really mean zero? Were there no gray seals in the area?
Correct. So seals were bounty hunted, harbor seals and gray seals, from the 1800s to the mid-1900s up until the 1960s. And so there were just a handful of gray seals that could be found in our waters in the U.S. and a few hundred harbor seals. And that was it. That's all that was left after the bounty hunts. So in the 1960s, actually, Massachusetts led the way of protecting gray seals and actually passed a Gray Seal Protection Act in order to stop the hunting and killing and harm of seals. So before the federal law, Massachusetts stepped in with a state law.
And then the federal law was passed in 1972. How did that come about?
Correct. So in 1972, there was a big realization that we were decimating the world's marine mammal population. We had hunted the great whales to near extinction. Most of the seals are pinnipeds. And there was an understanding that we were causing harm to our environment by doing that. So the Marine Mammal Protection Act came into play to protect really the health of the environment as well. And that was one of the big factors of the Marine Mammal Protection Act, was not just, I always say, not just protecting these animals because they were cute and fuzzy or, big and blubbery, but because they played important ecological roles that we were removing before we fully understood what their removal was doing.
You've said, when the population grows from zero to what it is today, of course that feels like it's exploding, even though it's not. And yet it does seem like the growing populations of seals must be having some impact on the ecosystem of the Cape. Is that true?
There could be impacts that we had been missing, say, for 30 to 40 years. And I think those impacts a lot of people recognize as change into the system. So there's a lot of misperception or perception of seeing, your eyes see these thousands of animals, and there's this thought that, they must be doing this or that, or they must be having a consequence. But for what we're finding in a lot of the science questions that we ask pertaining to a lot of the questions and misperception is we're finding that their impact or perceived impact isn't really what we think it is. So there's a lot of misperception about impacts on water quality or consumption of fish, their role in bringing larger predators, and there's a lot of unknown still.
Are you saying that all of those things are misconceptions?
A lot of them are, yes.
And yep. What are the biggest of those misconceptions?
Well, one I hear about almost on a daily basis is water quality. I was at the beach actually yesterday and heard someone say the seals must be polluting our beaches with their fecal matter. And we've been looking at water quality data from the state of Massachusetts, actually our Department of Public Health data. And what we see is that the beaches that are closer to seals are actually cleaner than those away. And part of that is our own human fecal matter, I guess you could say, and our poor septic systems, which cause beach water quality to go down, not the seals.
So, Andrea, we spoke with Peter Howell last week. He's a businessman. He's an avid fisherman. He's the founding director of the Nantucket-based Seal Action Committee and a director of the Atlantic Salmon Federation. He expressed some concern about the impact seals are having on the fishing industry. Let's listen to what he had to say.
Clearly, many of our fisheries are in trouble. Cod is one of them, most often referred to. And there's great scientific debate as to how much of an effect the gray seals are having on that particular species, not to mention all kinds of other species.
So what's your reaction to that?
I would say that the data we have, the science we have in our area here in the Gulf of Maine, Cape Cod, this region, doesn't support that at all, especially when we're talking about cod. So in our studies, what we do is we look at prey DNA. So we're looking at the DNA samples, the hard parts. We're looking for stable isotopes, fatty acid analysis, so different methods to look and see what seals are eating. And in terms of cod, what we see here is that there are some estimates, small percentages, but that's not the majority of their diet. So that's what our data shows. And I absolutely know that they do eat other species, not just sand lance, but commercially important species as well. It's the quantity of those different species that's been in debate that the science right now does not support that they're eating these great abundances of.
So let me ask you, do you think that there could at some point be a tipping point where there are too many seals and it does put the ecosystem out of balance?
I would say that the ecosystem determines that, not us. And I think that's a really important point to bring up, is that there's that human carrying capacity of what we think is acceptable, and then there's the ecosystem carrying capacity.
And there's a disparity there.
There's a very big disparity. And we know through ecosystem studies, through really understanding what ecosystems are doing right without our help, is that there comes to be a point of balance. So there's either enough fish, there's enough land, there's enough resources for the organisms in our oceans to thrive. And we live in a place that's an amazingly healthy ocean. And I know some fishers will say it's not. We've had mismanagement of fish species, and some are declining, some are increasing. But when it comes to letting our ecosystem determine what is in balance, especially the marine ecosystem, and that's a really important distinction from land and terrestrial management, the marine ecosystem will find a point of balance. So I think it's very different when you think about it from human terms or from an ecological perspective.
So when we spoke with Peter Howell, the director of the Nantucket-based Seal Action Committee, he's also part of establishing a new organization, which is called the Coalition to Amend the Marine Mammal Protection Act. As we know, that's the federal act that prohibits sort of the taking of the seals. Here's Howell on how he want or why he wants that act to be amended.
The issue is, when we talk to the regulators, NOAA, for example, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and we say, look, don't you agree that this particular species, gray seals, has demonstrably recovered and that they may be having some effect on our ecosystem? The response we get from them is, there's nothing we can do about it. The act, the law, protects that species in perpetuity. So if you want us to do anything, you're going to have to change the law first.
So here's this argument that it's not necessarily about culling seals, but about being able to have a substantive conversation about this growing population. Do you think that's a necessary conversation, and is the current state of the federal law stifling it?
Personally, I think that's a misrepresentation of what the Marine Mammal Protection Act is capable of and what our federal government, when it does step in, can or cannot do. I think that's incorrect, and it could be not having a firm understanding of what the Marine Mammal Protection Act does. So under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, there are provisions to deal with rebounding populations and work with the government in order to remedy those conflicts that arise. So it is true that we are in this new state of being. Once this law had been passed, we came to the point, for some species, not all, of recovery. But this idea of delisting a marine mammal is what that's not what the law is about. It's about recovering ecosystems and species together. It's actually, and this is another point that's often forgotten about the law, which I find to be interesting, it's the first ecosystem-based management law in our country, which had in it this understanding that the ecosystem was essential in understanding its success. So there are provisions, and I think it's not necessarily changing the law, but using it as it should be used.
So what are some of these provisions for as the species bounces back that are already baked into the law?
Yeah, so one of the most important ones, and one that I feel needs more attention, is that there is the ability to say to use deterrence. So you can deter animals from certain areas or from your fishing vessels. And that's one that needs a lot more attention. It needs more funding behind. It needs more research behind so that we can actually utilize the technologies that we have to find a a balance in that way of how we deal with rebounding wild populations in our backyard. So
I want to ask you just a quick clarifying question. I want to make sure I understand. Deterrence for whom? Deterrence for human behavior or deterrence of the gray seals to keep them out of the human sort of interaction area? What does deterrence mean?
That's a great question, actually, because it does go both ways. Part of it is education. We need more education on how we deal with wildlife in general as human populations become less accustomed to it. So that's one, is what do we do through education? The second are actually deterrents. So for instance, to deter a porpoise from a fishing net, you can use these things called pingers, and they emit a high frequency sound that deters porpoise from going into fishing nets. Knowing the biology, the life history of animals, we can start figuring out ways to deter animals, maybe through a sound or a smell or a something we don't know yet that could relieve some of those conflicts if those are operational, such as with fishing gear or commercial gear.
Okay, you have said before that you've noticed a lot of misinformation, misconceptions, misunderstanding about seals in public debates and conversations, and that you've presented the science about the seals and been told basically you're biased, it's fake news, or you as a researcher are in it for the money. Has that been happening a lot? And what do you think is going on?
I think it's difficult to deal with change. I think that's a really big part. And I have a lot of empathy for people who have, you know, had to live in a system that's different, whether it's you're catching different fish species or not catching them at all, or learning to live in a place where it's no different than it was 50 years ago. And I get that there's a lot of change, and that's really hard. That's really hard to understand. But I think the biggest part, and I can't emphasize this enough, is the way that we understand science and data, the way that we as scientists share that science and data and have to do a better job of really not talking to, but really speaking with our community partners, our public. One of the most important things of the consortium is really emphasizing that we are community scientists. We want to work together and share information. We are completely transparent. And if there's any data that isn't accessible because of a paywall that exists for, let's say, a journal article, we will get it to you and make sure that the data is accessible and that you are actually part of collecting that data as well.
I guess to that end, I should ask, you know, this question of self-interest or self-dealing is something that every part of science is dealing with. So do you have any conflicts of interest in this research that we should know about?
No, I mean, not at all. I think a lot of people ask me, how on earth did you start with seals as part of, you know, the research that you do? And it actually started at a time when no one really cared. And I started back in 2000. When there were practically no seals, I was really interested in the contaminant levels for ocean health and human health and understanding what was in our environment. And these animals, to me, are true sentinels of what's happening in our oceans. So it doesn't matter if you're a landowner, a business owner, a fisherman, we all want healthy oceans. And that's my only interest, is understanding what a healthy ocean is so that we can all enjoy it. And it's that question of conflict or self-interest comes up a lot. And I always laugh that scientists are in it for the money. We want to answer questions. That's what our job is. And the questions aren't for ourselves. It's for our environment. It's for each other. It's for our future. And I would say wholeheartedly, that's why I do what I do. It's to make sure we have a healthy ocean for all in the future.
All right. That's Andrea Bogomolny. She's the chair of the Northwest Atlantic Seal Research Consortium. Andrea, thank you so much for joining Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
That is our show for today. Radio Boston is produced by Jamie Bologna, Zoe Mitchell, Chris Siderick, Paris Alston, and Walter Wolfman. Tim Skog is our technical director, and today we had engineering by Renee Marchando. Our executive producer is Hitesh Hathi. I'm Tiziana Deering. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.